All right, thank you all for coming, Kim. You get what you pay for. All right, let's just say that. So thus the disclaimer, and I'm going to fall all over myself talking about this. So I teach over in COBA, and I teach a personal financial planning class I've taught for many years, and some of you have seen some of the other presentations that I've done with Ryan Jessup, or I presented here 4-ish years ago, different topics, but some of it overlaps a little bit. I just want to make sure you know this is full of advice here. Some of it's my opinion, some of it's opinion of others, and I agree with it. Done some research. Particular views of scripture inform what I'm saying. So a lot of these things are debatable. So I'm not going to pretend that everything I say is just the way to do it. I'm just going to say, for what I can tell, and at this point in my life, this is where I am, all right? So, and I think everybody can find something useful here. So I'll be talking about marriage, or maybe it's already too late. The marriage has already started. But we can still talk about the early years and what we could do there, and parenthood and retirement. And I'll give you some suggested resources. What I might do, I meant to print some things out, and I just got this presentation ready about 5 minutes before I came over here. So I can send it to you if you want it. So I'll probably, even if you don't want it, I'll probably send it to you. I'll just send it to everybody on the list, and you can do with it as you will. All right. So I will try to leave a little bit of time at the end to talk about things you want to talk about, or interrupt me. I'm fine with that. I'm totally fine. In fact, you know, I don't know. As a teacher, I like it when students interrupt. That means people are awake and have a question. That's great. I'm not going to spend a lot of time in scripture, but I do think what the Bible has to say about money is just so important. And so, off the top of my head, I thought, you know, what are the three scriptures? I was thinking of Dan McGregor kind of question. What are the top three scriptures that inform and drive what we do with money? And these are not necessarily the three, but I pick three. All right, so one that I just keep coming back to, it's just so simple, but it's so big with implication, is that the earth is the Lord's and all that is in it. I mean, it's all God's, right? And so we say that, but do we really live that way? And I think if we took that to heart and realize that everything that we have, everything that we are, is His, would be helpful. And then the idea of being faithful in a little bit. If we can do a little bit, we can do a lot. If we're not honest with a little bit, why would God give us more? So lots of ways that I could probably interpret the scripture the wrong way, but I think the concept of being faithful for whatever we have is really an important idea. And then from Proverbs, when we are constantly in debt and lots of different kinds of debt, we really are living as slaves, and God does not want that for His people, and He made that really clear many times in Scripture. So I'll talk about debt some, but I just it's a painful thing that many of us have used or are using, but we need to be aware of the downsides of it. So let's talk about marriage. I am just not the expert on a lot of these things. All right, I'm going to refer you to people like Heidi to talk about communicating. All right, it's just such an important thing for us to be willing to speak with a future spouse, potential future spouse, our spouse about finances. And I don't have any magical tips here, really. But I think our experiences with money and childhood really inform a lot of this. And so no two of us grew up exactly the same way, and that's going to affect how we see money and how we use it, can lead us to certain paths that may be good or may be bad. And so for us to have good marriages, we really need to start talking about these things in the marriage. Money problems, as you probably know, are a factor in a large number of divorces. So if we can't talk about this, ignoring the financial aspect of our lives together is not a good way to start. So talking about money backgrounds, I think, is a good way to understand where the other person is coming from. And it took me a long time to realize, just in my life, that my wife and I, we had different backgrounds with money, but her parents raised her in a way that she could understand my life a lot. We're more on the same page than I thought, and that really has been a blessing in our marriage, and I just kind of stumbled into it. A lot of people don't have that blessing and really have to work at it a little bit more. What financial goals does each spouse have? Talk about this. What does each spouse want to do? Because if it's not the same thing, it needs to be more discussion and negotiating or something, realizing that. There may be some elephants in the room, especially these days, I think, with marriages that are starting where one spouse or perhaps both are bringing in significant debt loads. That's the elephant I'm talking about. And hopefully this comes up in discussion, but to pretend that this is not going to cause any friction, I think that's just a bad place to start. So having discussion about existing debt loads, what's the plan, how are we going to get through that? I don't know, you can get into some sticky spots here. Are parents possibly going to help with, if it has to do with student loans, depending on the age of the people and the marriage and all that? So clarifying expectations, I think, would be very helpful up front. On the positive side on this, I just checked in with one of my first students at ACU from many years ago, and he and his wife, his name's Drew Ricks, he came to campus and talked about this a few years ago, so I feel fine talking about his name. He was checking in with me saying things are still going well. They came out of ACU together having about $100,000 of debt, and they got married and went off to the Metroplex, and they just were committed to getting rid of that very quickly. And Drew's dad must be some incredible guy. I've never met him, but he sat Drew down and said, yeah, this is good, but you still need to treat your wife well, and you need to do some fun things occasionally. And I mean, it's great advice. But they were both committed to it. That was one thing they wanted to get done. And so they paid it down in just under 4 years, and they lived a very, I don't know, maybe ascetic life from the standards of most people that live in Dallas-Fort Worth, but they got it done. And he had a lot of stories about how they did it. And I just think it's fun as a countercultural thing, helped their marriage. They were both determined to do it, and a great outcome. And they've got a house now, one child, one toddler and another one on the way, he was telling me, and things are going great. So anyway, just to encourage that to not be swept under the carpet. So hopefully both spouses are willing to talk about the plan. What are we going to do? How are we going to live? How are we going to spend? How are we going to give? How are we going to save? So just not talking about it is not a good plan. Where are you going to live? What kind of house are you renting? I don't think renting is the worst thing in the world for young couples. And we did buy our first house till we were in our 30s, and I actually think it was a good thing. So how are you going to make it if one spouse stops working for a while? I've heard lots of great advice that I don't know who all gave this advice. Seems like the Moneys did, Royce and Pam and others I've heard of who've gone through ACU who were told, live on one income if you can. And I think it's a great thing to aspire to. That gives you the couple a lot more flexibility if somebody either doesn't want to work or can't work for a while. And so, but you have to plan that up front. It's hard to rework that after many years, but it could be done. Okay, what else is I gonna say? Yeah, paying off debt, saving for a house, radical generosity. This could be something a couple aspires to. I think there's some great financial goals that a couple could have. Being realistic about a wedding. Boy, I'm glad we got married when we did. Seems like it's crazy now. I don't know. These crazy weddings. So crazy expensive weddings for which you go into debt for potentially years, that's more stress on the spouse. Or stress on the parents. I'm kind of worried about that now. I'm thinking about the parents a lot more if that were to happen. So then there's real practical things that need to be discussed. I don't have all the answers. I know that most advice I have seen suggests having joint accounts, put the money together. Separate accounts can lead to secretive actions on the part of spouses, and that's just not going to be healthy. I would suggest considering using a budgeting tool. Some of my students absolutely are sick of this tool. I'm always talking about it. But it doesn't have to be YNAB. YNAB stands for you need a budget. But it's a way to, it's like a virtual Dave Ramsey envelope system where you allocate your dollars to certain jobs. And actually YNAB does some other things I really like. So how are you going to manage this? And I think talking about this and having a plan is really helpful. And also retirement planning, that needs to be a priority from the beginning. If you can start early, that's great. I'm going to talk more about retirement stuff in just a minute, but I think this is where both spouses need to have a discussion about it and make sure they're on the same page. One spouse wants to save a ton and the other doesn't, that's going to add more stress to the marriage. And so some kind of negotiation and discussion is probably helpful. Okay. Let me just talk a little bit about this YNAB tool. I won't harp on it too much, but it's got not only is it a software that you can use to do all these things, it actually has a philosophy built into it that I really have found helpful. So for me, I don't really like budgeting, and I don't do it all the time. To be honest, I taught personal finance a lot, and I'm always saying, oh, you ought to budget your money. Well, yes, you at least ought to have an idea where the dollars are going. I don't think it's the end of the world. We all work differently, so it's not a one-size-fits-all. But with YNAB, they have these four rules. What I like about it is if you follow the rules, it's woven into the software, and it's going to help you in lots of different ways. So first idea, give every dollar a job. Go ahead and plan on telling every dollar that comes in what it's going to go do. Some dollars go off and let you have fun with friends or whatever. Some dollars need to go sit in a corner for another year or two until you need the dollar, but they all need to be given a job to do. Otherwise, unemployed dollars go out and find things to do that aren't always what we want. Okay, so, and the other cool thing about this is YNAB says, don't worry about all the dollars that will come later, because that's not what we're having to decide anything about right now. Let's just work with what we have right now. It's kind of a freeing way to look at it. When I first started, I'm like, well, that's wrong, because we need a spreadsheet and 6 and 12 months out and all this. YNAB, no. If you don't have the dollar, you don't have any decisions to make with that dollar, so just focus on what you have right now. And it really, to me, it seems like it works pretty well. Embrace your true expenses. Get ready for that auto insurance bill that comes every 6 months, or get ready for Christmas, or that vacation that you would like to have. These things are chunks of money that we don't necessarily anticipate well. YNAB lets you set that up, save a little bit every month. When the bill comes, you're not tempted to pay your auto insurance on an installment plan, like most of us do. Many of us do that, but you could set it up yourself and then save the installment charge that you have to pay. Roll the punches. The other thing about budgeting, people hate to do it because we always fail. Things don't work out the way we plan. So with YNAB, you can move money around, no problem. Age your money. Don't live on the money that's coming right now. Let's live on money from last month or maybe a couple months ago, so that we're not paycheck to paycheck. If the money's not there immediately, I'm going to be in trouble. Okay. So these are some ideas. All right. So as far as investing for retirement goes, I'd say, since I think most of you are employed by ACU somehow, or you wouldn't be here, do what you can to invest the 8% for the 403b plan. It's not easy. It's not easy for anyone, really. And maybe you're not there. If you're not, work your way there. You can change it during the year. You don't have to do it just at benefits time. And so that's right? I think that's right. I'm pretty sure that's right. I hope that's right. I'm telling you it's right. But so if you don't know how to allocate your money, I've got some suggestions. I'm not going to spend much time on it, but those life cycle funds that Tia has are not a bad way to go. The fees are a little higher than I'd like. Gross fees are 0.8 something percent. The net's about 0.69% per year. A little high, but it's a good way to invest your money. And so you can put 100% of your money in that one fund, and that's very well diversified. If you want some other guidance, I've got a book in the resources at the back I'll talk about. And then just a suggestion, occasionally people are talking about, oh, I'm worried about the markets, I'll just put it in cash. I wouldn't do that, all right? And then that's just not going to help you in the long run. It's not going to fund your retirement. I'd also suggest staying away from the annuity. I know some people, I'm very close to some people that have used these in the past. Some of them may have worked out well if you were invested in them a long time ago with a high interest rate, but these days it's pretty low. And so the guaranteed or the TIA traditional annuity, not my favorite, but it's hard to get out of those once you're in. So you can start working on that if you want to. Just a suggestion, my opinion there, right? Second thing about investing for retirement, if you can save more than 8%, personally, I would say don't put it in the 403B. At least that's my suggestion. If you are using GPA for your health insurance, or if you're using some other high deductible health plan, you can save in an HSA. HSAs really are awesome. Pretty excited about them, okay? And so people talk about a triple tax benefit. It's a quadruple tax benefit on these things, all right? So no payroll tax. If you've heard some of my other presentations, we talked about this before. No payroll tax for you or for ACU. You're helping ACU out also. No income tax on the front end while it's growing, and on the back end if you use it for medical expenses, qualified medical expenses. If you get to retirement and you don't use it for medical expenses, which is already a little bit questionable, a lot of people are going to have more medical costs in retirement than they think, then you just pay income tax on it just like you would on your 403B anyway. All right, so then it's still better than the 403B because you didn't pay the payroll tax up front. All right, so you don't get a match for it, I mean, other than ACU putting in the $500 or $1,000, but I'd say it's better than putting an extra 9 or an extra 1 or 2% above your 8% into the 403B. If I confuse you, I'm sorry. I've got to start going faster. okay, the trick, though, with the HSA, the downside is if you just stick it in there and leave it in with HSA Bank, this ain't going to work so great. You've got to actually build up enough money to move it over to, I would suggest, TD Ameritrade and invest in things like you would invest in our 403B plan. You need to do the same thing with your HSA money. And that starts to get complicated because there's just a gazillion things you could do with that money. And I'm not doing such a great job myself right now. And Ryan Jessup is hassling me all the time. So, Kyle, what are you doing with that $2,000 in your HSA that you said you were going to invest? Well, the market's high, Ryan. I'll get to it eventually. Anyway, he's beating me up on that every day. So that is one downside of the HSA. You really got to think about it. Just briefly, if you were just starting out and you hadn't thought about saving for retirement, I just want to encourage you very quickly to think about the benefits of starting early, all right? We just do the math very quickly. If somebody started saving at age 24 and they saved for 10 years and they were earning 8% on their investments and they just put in $4,500 a year, they'd have over $1.1 million. Of course, that's in future dollars, which won't buy as much, but they would have over $1.1 million at age 70. Well, consider somebody else who doesn't start until 10 years after that. So if she started 10 years later, so age 34, did the same investing, $4,500 a year, made the same 8%, but never stopped contributing, so put in a lot more money, in other words, would not even get to the $1 million because of compounding of interest, all right? Money really starts to pick up speed if you start investing early. So just an encouragement to start early. This is something that couples definitely need to think about. And then finally, just flying through things that I was thinking about for younger couples, there are a few things about insurance that maybe people don't know getting started out. Renter's insurance, pretty inexpensive. If you don't own your own place, you really ought to look into having that, especially I'm telling students with their dogs. If you've got a dog, you need renter's insurance because it has liability coverage inside of it. Okay, so if anything you do causes harm to somebody else or is alleged to cause harm, renter's insurance can help you out. Auto insurance, I would just suggest raising deductibles, all right? You've got to have money set aside to meet that extra cost, but it will lower your payments. And so, and then if you're driving a car like my current car again, is not worth much of anything. And so there's no reason to have Part D insurance if your car isn't worth much more than the $1,000 or $2,000 that your deductible would actually pay for. So consider doing that. It's another reason to buy or drive cars till they actually die. I'm looking to have that happen with this Mazda of mine. We'll see if I can actually get it to die on the highway. That's what I'm trying to do it. We'll see. Hopefully when I'm driving, not my wife. I think she'd be really ticked. She's driving it today, now that I think about it. Anyway, personal umbrella insurance. This is just some additional liability that's not that expensive, and it will sits on top of your auto insurance and your home insurance or renter's insurance policy and covers you beyond the limits of your other policy. So if a couple starting out, they may not have heard of this personal liability umbrella insurance. It's not that expensive and really worth looking into, especially because we're such a litigious society. People are suing everybody else all the time. And then with insurance and with everything else, just shop around every so often to look at getting better rates. Insurance companies are actually notorious. There's been some articles I saw one in Consumer Reports recently where they just raise your prices just because it's hard to move your insurance, and you know you get a better deal if it's all with one company. So I go ahead and every so often I just commit 3 to 4 hours to calling and then move all my policies if they can't play the game, and most of them won't. I mean, they just, well, the rate's the rate, I can't change it, okay. And so you can save quite a bit of money. Yes, you have to invest the hours to move it, but same with Suddenlink or your cable bill, whatever. If you're not calling every so often, you're getting robbed. There are actually some apps, I don't know if any of you know the name, I can't remember the names. There's some apps where they will do this for you, basically negotiate your bills, and they take a little bit of a cut of the decrease, but I mean, if you hate to negotiate, look at that. It's just a way to save some money, because otherwise, oh, it's crazy. All right, so I'm not gonna go into that much detail for all these others, all right? But that's the sort of overall stuff that applies to a lot of people. I was advising an 82-year-old friend of mine the other day about cutting cable and what she could do and how she could do it. I think she just got confused and said, forget it. but I'm all about that. So let's talk about parenthood, getting ready for parenthood. A few legal things to think about. If you haven't written a will, now's a good time to start thinking about it once you have kids. And so you can also develop what's called a declaration of guardians for minor children. It's a separate document from your will. We have ours in our will. I think that's old these days. I think we like to separate that guardian document from the will itself, so you can update who you would like to be guardians of your children, minor children, if the worst were to happen. I got to warn you though, full estate planning package with all this legal stuff with a real lawyer in Texas is going to run you a few hundred dollars. I thought I'd get the brother discount when I did this 19 years ago with my brother's law firm, and the bill was $600 then. I don't know what it would be today, so it is not cheap. There are some cheapo-ish ways to go about it, but the risk is you go cheap enough and it could actually cause more trouble if these documents actually need to be used. So there's nolo.com, there's legalzoom.com. I'm not saying they're the best, but there are cheaper ways to do this. And then I found a lawyer in Richardson who actually has instructions on his website, on a blog, on how to create a holographic will. In Texas, a holographic will is legal, where you write it out by hand. So he has some advice on how to do it. Okay, and then I did find a declaration of guardians for minor children from a lawyer somewhere in Texas, and she had the whole form there. That seems pretty okay. I mean, I'd do that as opposed to nothing, because at least you're telling the court, here's what I would like to have happen, because otherwise the court's just going to, I mean, the judge is going to make the best decision possible, but if you've spoken and said what you want to have happen, that's good. So dark things to think about, but we ought to think about that. More dark things. Life insurance, now's the time to really think about that. You could use the group insurance, group life through ACU and increase coverage, or you could go out on your own and do what I would suggest would be a level premium term life insurance policy. It's level premium because you pick the term you want, whether 10, 15, 30 years, and they'll price you the monthly cost that'll run you, and it's that same price the whole time. And so I look back, and in 2007 when I signed up for a 20-year policy, I'm kind of wishing it had just been a little bit longer at this point. So anyway, pick your term wisely, but then the cost won't go up, and then by the time you get to the end of the term, hopefully your kids are self-sufficient, all right? They're independent, and they don't need the financing anyway. So that would be my suggestion for saving money on life insurance, because it's really important to have that. Know some people that passed without it, and it was tough on that family. So it's real stuff. Planning for college, I'd say planning within reason. Retirement may not be optional. When it comes, eventually you gotta retire if you can't work anymore. College is optional, all right, even though we work at ACU. So I'd just say that the parents' financial needs really need to be met first before saving a lot for a kid's college. And when I say financial needs being met, if you're not contributing 8% to the ACU 403B, your financial needs are not being met. If you've got significant consumer or student debt, you got to pay that off first before you start saving for the kids. That's my suggestion, because you're got to take care of that stuff first. Basic emergency fund needs to be in place. I've always talked about 529 savings plans, and I think they're good, worth looking into. There's also the Coverdell ESAs, and I hadn't really looked at them as much, but actually, I think that might even be a better deal for me in my situation than a 529 plan. So those are two ways to save for college: 529 savings plan. Each state has its own plan. There's no real reason in Texas to use the Texas plan, honestly. You could just pick any state's plan that looks good to you. But there are other ways to save for college. Those are just a couple of ideas. All right, train kids about money. Man, this makes me feel inadequate here, all right? So I've done my best. I don't claim expert status here, but my 19-year-old has not filed for bankruptcy yet, so I'm going to claim that as a win. That's a win. So I think we just need to have open communication. Not that we load it on our kids, and that's the thing. It's a fine line, because you can talk about it so much that kids are like, oh my goodness, I didn't realize I cost you so much and I'm such a burden. We don't want to go there. I can think of, well, I'll just leave it at that. And our discussions need to be age appropriate, you know. So I was thinking about generosity. One thing that's hard is if our financial generosity is done online or it's automatic. I've been bothered by that for years. So I would write out a check. I wanted my kids to see that, but now I'm so lazy. It's old. It's over now. Using the device. But I think there's something about them seeing us being generous. If they don't see it, maybe we need to talk about it. It's a dicey thing. You don't want to be bragging, hey, we are so great because blah, blah, blah. But if they don't know that you're generous, then how are they learning to be that way? And then there's the forced thing. Well, I'll make my kids set 10% aside. I know I've got a lot of friends. That's how they grew up. I remember having a fight with my dad about that. Fine, I'll put the whole $5 bill in the plate. Well, you don't have to do that. Anyway, you know, I've just seen it. It's not easy, right? We just have to work at it, do our best. We don't want to embitter them about being forced to do too much of something, right? That's not going to help. And let's see, everyday discussions. I think instead of saying we can't afford that, maybe talk about, hey, we're having to make choices here. Just talk about the choices. We're making choices. Everybody's making choices. When people buy stuff all the time, they're choosing to have a rough life later oftentimes. And so instead of saying we don't have enough, I don't want them to think God doesn't give us what we need. God gives us what we need, right? And so if we're communicating, oh, there's not enough, I don't think that's helpful. But it's not. We just do anything with it, okay? Financial training wheels. Oh, I got to pick up the pace, folks. Again, age appropriate basis. I think it's great to sort of raise the training wheels up over time and let your kids do some more and more stuff on their own. A couple examples. I actually thought of this because of another faculty member years ago and talking to them about what they were doing. Oldest daughter was in middle school, I think. I don't know. Whenever you start wearing makeup, she's wearing makeup. I want to buy makeup. Let's buy makeup every day. And I'm like, okay, here's your $15 extra for the month for your allowance. Buy all the makeup you can. with $15. Okay, maybe it's 20. I don't know, but it wasn't much. And then I got out of this whole, well, I'm tired of buying makeup. That was her choice then. And so we need to just, at an age-appropriate level, eventually got into clothes. All right, here's an extra 20, 30, I don't know what it was, a month. You're responsible for all your clothes. I'm not buying them. My wife always bends the rules. That's her call. But that helps them to learn how to, there is some kind of a limit, even if mom is soft on it sometimes. And Dave Ramsey would hate this, totally hate this, but I encouraged my 18-year-old to get a credit card in her name, and she did. It's for a couple of reasons. For establishing a credit history is one thing, and now they basically made her send in $200 and she could only, or $300, and that's all she could charge. I mean, it was like worthless card. She was frustrated for 6 months, and then they took those training wheels off, and now she's got a little bit of credit. She pays it off. I don't ever see the bill. She pays it all. I never am going to pay that card. She knows that. And so she's, you know, starting to make those little leaps. Sent some money to Vanguard. Warmed my heart that day. Dad, how do I get money in my Vanguard account? Oh, wow, let's talk. So anyway. And so allowing them to face the consequences of when things go bad, you know, if Johnny blows all his allowance on video games and then he wants to go to Gaddyland and we're like, oh, poor Johnny, here's your money. That's not good, right? It's not good because then Johnny thinks there's always somebody to bail him out. So so do we live the way we tell our children they should live? I mean, it really comes back to us. Are we living, we're going to tell them to do something we don't even do? That's pretty tough, so maybe we need to work on ourselves at the same time or together, right? Okay, I was going to ask for ideas on kids, but in the interest of time, I'm going to keep moving, all right? So let's talk about retirement, because you guys may have some other great things to think about with kids that I haven't thought about. So for retirement, I hope you've been planning, all right? We all need to be thinking about this from the first job, start paying, putting money aside for retirement, because at some point we won't be able to work. Hopefully it'll be a while. In terms of when to start getting Social Security benefits, actually even before that, when to retire, there are a whole lot of not just financial, but emotional and psychological issues there. I'm just seeing right up front and personal what's going on with my parents in this. And so hopefully you know, as you get closer to retirement, you talk to somebody that's just ahead of you, that's done it, see what they regret, if anything. What would they have done differently? Would they have retired 10 years before? Oh, should retire a long time ago. But or would they have stayed and worked longer? I think these are important things to think about. When to get Social Security benefits. If you're an average person with average longevity, it doesn't matter when you start getting your benefits, because the benefits are keyed into the average longevity of people at these different ages. So that's all by design. So if you start, you can start receiving Social Security benefits if you paid into the system at age 62, you're gonna get a lot less per year. But if you have average longevity, in the end, it's all gonna work out to be the same. So I typically say, why don't you wait till later to get the benefits? There's reasons for that. You get more money the longer you wait. Average retirement, or the full retirement age, is working its way to age 67, right? So if you're 60 or younger, born in 1960 or later, we have to be 67 to have full retirement age, okay? So anything before that, it's early retirement, but just every year you wait, your benefits are gonna grow, all right? Up to age 70, at that point, there's no reason not to draw those retirement benefits, okay? There's a lot of interesting Social Security strategies out there that I looked at, can't really go into a lot of detail, but if you're a married couple, you could change things up and one pull at one time and the other start taking it later. So that's something to think about. Healthcare and retirement, it may cost us a lot more than we think. The latest study with Fidelity says average married couple is going to spend, I can't believe this, almost $300,000 for health and medical costs in retirement, the couple together. Females spend a little bit more than males. That's because they're alive. That doesn't even cover long-term care costs, all right? That's separate. So assisted living, nursing homes, speaking of that, that insurance is really hard to get these days. So if you have it, You might want to keep it. But nursing homes are expensive, $80,000 to $100,000 a year on average. Oh, it's just a lot of things to think about here. On the health on the healthcare, Medicare is complicated. I've learned a lot about that in the recent years as well. And I've learned that you might want to have some kind of a consultant to help you navigate the piles of books they're going to send you, trying to figure out what Medicare covers and when and how you should do it. I do not understand. Okay, so I'm not even going to be able to tell you. I'm just going to say seek help on that because it is a little bit daunting when you get that one. On long-term care insurance, if you get it, it's going to possibly go up every year. All right, and now they're selling it through whole life policies, which are already really expensive. So I'm not a real big fan of buying long-term care insurance now. It's just nobody's selling it. We live too long. The insurance companies can't figure out what to charge. And they just charge a lot. So we just need to save more. Yet another reason to save for retirement, all right? Estate planning, I highly recommend you consider going to that Pruitt Gerontology event this Friday. They're going to talk about these things. Matt Mercer is going to come in at lunch. Look at your HR email, and it tells you how to RSVP that for that. But you'll probably want to have, well, not only your will and all that stuff, there's HIPAA things to think about. Who do you want to have? Well, I mean, this is for all of us. We need to have people on HIPAA forms whenever we go to the doctor that allow people we love to be able to talk to the doctor about our health care if we are unable to. Advanced directive, durable power of attorney, all this stuff. Medical power of attorney, things to think about. Can't really say much more than that, but go to that event if you can. It's important to think about. I'm just biased towards fee-only financial planners, okay? And so I'll just say that. There are two in town that are part of this NAFA group, and I know people at both of them, Carter Asset Management and Team Financial Strategies. At a certain point, it just gets so complicated with the finances and everything. Like, my parents were seeking help years ago, and I'm like, I think I need you to talk to somebody else. I just can't figure all that stuff out. There's too many complicated things going on. So I think at a certain point, even if you're pretty independent, you might need some help with financial decision making. It's just some of it can be expensive. And so I can understand trying to save money on it. But one other thing I got to mention before we get to the resources I suggest, just the elder financial exploitation and abuse is rampant and growing fast. And so for you or for loved ones in your life, be aware of this. The numbers are staggering. It's just increased at a very fast clip. The worst, the people are affected the most or in the worst way, most dollars scammed from them involve people that they know, either relatives or caregivers that scam them the most. For those folks, the average loss, actually, I don't know if this is of all people over 70 or just the people who got scammed. They talk like it's for all people over 70 were scammed an average of $42,000, and it was $17,000 if it was a stranger, $50,000 on average if it was somebody they knew, caregiver or relative. And so Gary West over at First Financial, he's done a presentation at Highland for us years ago about elder financial abuse, and so there's some resources. First Financial's got some resources on that I encourage you to look into, but just be aware of that. It just, I can see how it happens, and there's especially when people start to lose cognitive ability, it's really hard to prevent it. So tough things to think about. Let me mention some suggested books, and then I didn't leave a whole lot of time for Q&A, but there's a new book out. Haven't had time to really look through it except what I could see on Amazon. But I really like this book that these guys, Portines and Bomber, wrote 3 years ago. And so True Riches looks like a follow-on to that. It's a unique approach, and it's a very serious approach about being faithful to what we've been given. So they have another one, God and Money, that I did read all the way through. So can't tell you everything about True Riches, but I really like that. If you're just trying to get an overall basic idea of finance, I like this Koppelner book. I've been teaching out of it. I'm about to switch books, but that one is a good one. And then Jim O'Donnell is a friend of mine. He's a Christian in Indiana and wrote this shortest book ever on saving for retirement. I like it. It's good in terms of telling you what to what things to invest in. If you're trying to get out of debt and that's the main thing, then Dave Ramsey's your guy. I just, some of Dave's stuff kind of annoys me, but he's great about getting out of debt. All right, that's, I got to give him credit on that. In terms of the budgeting software, I like YNAB. Like I said, it's a little pricey now. Okay, it's getting up there. I would start with the monthly and see if it really works for you, but you got to try at least 2 or 3 months to see. First month free. Every dollar is Dave Ramsey's version of the same kind of thing. I think I like YNAB more, but I haven't used every dollar, can't say. I used to use Mint. I did not like it then. Some people love it still, but I would suggest YNAB. Khan Academy actually has some good training resources. I have not looked at much there, but there are other stuff that I use I've really enjoyed. And so if you're just trying to get some little tutorials, I suggest Khan Academy. All right, there's some good things on personal finance. All right, sorry for the blah, 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 blah. What questions or things you want to talk about that I didn't devote as much time to as you were hoping? Or yes?
When you mentioned moving money from your HSA account, how much do you think you should like have, and at what point do you move some over, and how much would you move over?
So I've gotten to where there's a complicated method that we talked about in our other, Ryan Jessup and I talked about, where you actually don't reimburse yourself from your HSA until way down the road. I don't really want to get into that, but I try to just have a little bit in my HSA bank account, but if I have any big bills, I'm using my own credit card because I get the points, and I reimburse myself later if I really got to, but if at all possible, I'm not even reimbursing myself yet, and I'm letting that money grow in the HSA. So I'm just leaving $500-$600 in my HSA bank account, and I'm trying to invest all the other dollars in at least a short-term bond fund that's earning maybe 1.5%. You're going to earn more interest there than the fee you're paying at HSA Bank if you do that. So you can at least put it in a really safe investment through TD Ameritrade. So I don't know if I really answered your question, but I just try to put as much over there to TD Ameritrade as I can, and I'm not doing a great job, honestly, in doing it myself, but that's what I'm trying to do.
So are you saying that you can, I mean, I guess there's just a way to get the cash out of that?
Yes. Yeah, to reimburse yourself. Yeah, you just go to HSA Bank, and you tell them what the date was, date of service, and who it was for and all that, and they'll just transfer it to your checking account. So you don't have to use the green card. No. I only get cash out for medical expenses. I mean, you can, but there's penalties and taxes and all that, so you don't want to do that. I'm just talking about reimbursable medical expenses that I have not yet reimbursed myself for, or I didn't use the green card up front.
Or when you accidentally use your P card to pay for your
chiropractor? Well. Hypothetically, you know somebody, right? I got this friend. All right, hope that helped. Trying to learn how to do that one. What else?
Any other good training wheel tips for kids?
And I told you, I pretty much gave you all my ammunition right there. I mean, it's just little things. I guess I found every time I got annoyed with, why am I reimbursing this? Because I'm the kind of guy, well, bring me your receipts. I mean, my 19-year-old just sent me an email. This is kind of questionable, Dad, but I paid cash for this thing that, you know, it's not questionable. She's just super nice about it. But just things that, can I just give you an allowance to cover it and try to move the decision-making over to the child bit by bit on an age-appropriate basis so they can start making those decisions. If we always make those decisions, or no decision, like, oh, you spend money on anything, I'll reimburse you. I mean, that's not training in the right way, right? They need to.
Is it helpful to put, like, have them set up their own little account? And I know one time, like, when I was with my kids, and they got, like, a debit card, and they didn't use it hardly ever. So I was just wondering if with children, if it's better to kind of let them have money at home and they kind of work out of that.
So I set up these online savings accounts, but then I didn't want my kids messing around on the online. So I'm like the I'm the transfer in and out guy. You want to turn that account into cash? Sure. Here's $20. I'm taking it out of your account right now. And so I'm kind of the bank that way. And in fact, I encourage, she'll say, well, I want cash this time. Okay. But if I put it in the bank, I know it's not going anywhere. And it earns interest. And I used to like add interest to it because the interest rates are so low. It was sad. But, you know, trying to show. It's hard to teach kids about interest when interest is 0.01%, right? It's like, anyway.
What about helping a young adult build credit? Since you mentioned the
credit card. Or a small loan. I mean, these are all things we don't want to teach, right? This is Dave Ramsey saying, no, no, no. I hear with the new law that they're able to use utilities payments and something else. I don't know what it was. There's something changing in how they're starting to do some credit scoring that may fix some of that problem. But in the past, if you didn't use debt, you didn't have a credit score. So I don't know. I'd say credit card, but then some people who are addicted to credit and things like that, that is a scary thing. I don't wanna get people hooked. Well, I appreciate your time. I got to run, and you may have to also. I'll send this out with some notes as well to everybody on the list. And if you got more questions, you can feel free to write me back, and maybe I'll help you. I don't know. I may not know the answer. I'll at least acknowledge your email. How about that?